All right, this is Mike Lemieux. I'm here with David Herman. He's our guest today, and this is Eye Falls Legends. Welcome, Dave.
Oh, thanks, Mike. Good to see you.
So, class of, this is a big question, though, class of 76 or class of 75?
I'd say the solid answer to that question is yes. So I grew up with the class of 1976 for as much as anybody can say that I've actually grown up.
Yeah.
But I found out about April of my junior year that I was graduating. So I graduated with the class of 75.
But you spent most of your time with class of 76.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, you remember high school and school back then.
Yep.
There was distinctions as far as the classes you went, but everybody hung out together.
So class of 76 would be Oli, Mel, Tweeter.
Yep. Turi.
Turi.
Yep.
We golfed one time down in the cities.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember that.
My guess, that was probably 80s, early 80s.
Yeah. So it was, I was with Robin Anderson. It was,
yep.
My foursome was Robin Anderson, Oli, Rocky Stone, and I can't remember who else was the foursome. So I rented a golf cart. Oli was driving it. Oli hit a tree.
I remember this, yes.
Ruined the golf cart. I had to pay for it.
Well, you know, what was interesting is that the class of 76 was really a pretty close class.
Yeah.
And we still actually get together on a fairly informal basis. It's Mel's birthday next week, so I'll give Mel a call and see how he's doing. But we did get together in the summers. We would get together, and on Friday night, we would do a Twins game.
Really?
In the old Metrodome. And then on Saturday, we would golf. And then we'd spend the rest of the year paying for the damage that we did to the golf course.
You guys did hang out a lot together. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
So this is, as you know, Dave, Eye Falls Legends. There's a lot of legends, and there's a lot of legends that we're going to be interviewing down the road. Well-deserved, in your case. You've done a lot through life, through high school, obviously, career-wise. You've achieved a lot, and you continue to achieve more and more. CEO of Essentia Health, over 15,000 employees?
Yep.
And
yeah,
I mean,
broad area, but I have the opportunity to serve the area that I grew up in.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
That is. That's very special. I'm blessed to do that.
Yeah, and you get to come home. You have a place on Birch Point,
yeah.
Sand Bay,
yeah.
close to where I live. So yeah. Nice place. So who was high school, obviously, junior high school, you had, there's certain people that influenced you. Who are some of the people that really, or maybe there weren't, maybe you just had this desire to get into health?
You know, what I would say is that there's just about everybody. I'd say that you and I really had a great opportunity to be raised by a community.
Mm-hmm.
That the people were looking out for you. You had great mentors within the community. I would say that, you know, there's a thing called, you know, this shared accountability that I think we were talking earlier. If your mom, Barb, would have said to me, you can't do that, and if I'd have said, you're not my mom, you can't tell me what to do, I'd be taking a bad hand and playing it very, very poorly on that. So there was this sense of community that we're all part of something that was bigger than ourselves. And then I think that there were mentors within the community, formal and informal mentors, and there was this expectation that I would say, excellence. There wasn't an expectation of performance, of perfection,
right.
Because we were far from perfect.
Right.
But people, because you're from International Falls and you were part of the community, people expected something of you. I also think that the friends that we, and you and I were just talking about this before we went live, the friends that we were privileged to have, there's a saying that show me your friends and I'll show you your future. I think that really pertains to this, because when you think of the people that you grew up with, that I grew up with, you know, the Dave Millards, the Doug Lemoines, the Tom Turries, the people in our class, the women in our class, you have, you know, Patty McBride Rule, you have Paula Pawlowski, Lorian, all these people, Marlene Bringendahl, these people brought their best every day, and which meant that if you didn't bring your best, somebody would notice.
That's right.
And I think that helped set a tone and an expectation. And yet at the same time, we always had tremendous fun. I even say right now, if it's not fun, I'm not coming anymore.
So define fun. I knew what I did when I was a kid. I mean, I knew when breakfast, lunch, and dinner were. And every time between, I was gone with my buddies.
Right.
On our bikes, we were gone.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's the same thing. You'd go down to, when don't go down to the river and play. So the first thing you do is go down to the river and play, right? And, you know, my parents had, you know, 4 kids in 5 years. So we got out. We went to the 11th Street Playground, and there were stuff to do there in the summer, and you skated in the winter, and you bought the new stick and broke it and were afraid to come home, and all that stuff that happened back there back then. So there was a lot, but it was outdoors. Yeah. I mean, when you think, how many TV channels did we have back in the 60s? Two? Yeah. Three, if you counted the CBC?
That's right.
So there wasn't a lot on TV, and there were a million kids here.
Yeah.
I mean, there's almost 300 kids in my high school class.
Wow. Big class.
Big class.
That's a really big class.
Yeah, big classes from kind of the mid-60s to the mid-70s.
Yep. I remember those classes. We were at the tail end of that. Mm-hmm. We were mid-200s, but they were big. Nowadays?
Yeah, I know.
Very, very small.
Yeah, so you don't have the opportunities. And then there's the distractions.
Yeah.
The people have now.
There are a lot of distractions versus the good, clean fun.
Yeah. But when I think back on, we had some very special teachers who were very, very good teachers. I still spend a lot of time reading history and have an abiding interest in history. It's because of Fred Endy.
Mm-hmm.
During the class, I don't know if you remember, there was a thing called American History Magazine. And he would give me the magazine and he'd have a little... place marker in there, said, I want you to read that, and we'll talk about that the next time you come in. And so we would do that, and he gave me books to read at the time, and I still do that, and I think about that. When you think about it, I've had the privilege and the opportunity to be on editorial boards of medical journals, and I still go back to when John Dalton taught us how to diagram a sentence. I mean, I can look at a piece of paper right now and find the error that something just jumps off the page. But those were things that seemed a challenge at the time, and they were, yet there's stuff I've been able to come back on and which has really enriched my life.
Now it's just second nature.
Yeah.
And I grew up with a father that has master's in English, so he corrected everything. It was painful sitting at the dinner table with him.
Yeah, exactly. The Inquisition and then correcting your English when you gave the answer. Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
So can you kind of walk us through, obviously, class of 76 or 75.
Yeah.
One of those two. But, you know, what transpired, obviously, you're in high school thinking, you know, I would like to be a chief executive officer of a large healthcare organization. Well, obviously, that wasn't the case.
That was not the plan,
But what are kind of the stages of development to, you know, post-high school to where you're at now?
I think that what I've always done is follow things that interested me and that I had a passion for. I would say that, you know, working at Riley's, I learned stuff about business that I still use every day from that. My journey was a little bit, I would say, convoluted. I was a paper boy for the Minneapolis Tribune, and one day there was a piece of paper in there that said, would you like to apply for scholarship? So I applied, and there was two check boxes, high school and college. Well, I checked both boxes, you know. When you come to a fork in the road, take it, right? So I checked both boxes, and through that, through the Minneapolis Tribune, I had the opportunity to go to Phillips Exeter Academy in Exeter, New Hampshire for a year.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I had dinner last week on Tuesday night, had an opportunity to be in the Twin Cities for dinner, and I sat next to Jay Coles, and Coles Publishing owned the Minneapolis Tribune at that time. And I had the conversation that being a paper boy for the Minneapolis Tribune changed my life. And he said, were you a scholarship student to Exeter? I said, yes, I was. He said, well, my father and grandfather went to Exeter. So we had that conversation.
Small world.
But it really expanded my world. I had the opportunity to see what the world was like outside of International Falls, take that leap, which was very, very interesting. Learned a lot from that.
Right.
And then that's one of the reasons I graduated early. I was one of the first post-secondary option students.
Mm-hmm.
So even when I was in high school, got the opportunity to go over to Rainy River, take classes over there, had some really good teachers over there. Phil Kangas for chemistry, Aaron Wenger for physics, Lee Grimmer for biology, Anderson for calculus.
Bruce Anderson.
Bruce, really a great teacher. So I was able to take the skills that I learned from that. I went to the University of Illinois really thinking about engineering, and then through that process, I got put on a project that one of the people in physiology was doing there, and they needed some electrical stuff on that, and found out that the people who were doing medicine were having a lot more fun than probably the electrical engineers. So did that, graduated from the University of Illinois, went to Mayo Medical School, then did my residency in ophthalmology at Mayo. Richard Brubaker, who was in ophthalmology, needed somebody that could program Fortran to work in his lab. Mm-hmm. And I found out that ophthalmology was an exciting field and a lot of fun. Did my residency in ophthalmology, went out to NIH in Bethesda, Maryland, and did a fellowship there. Then came back on staff at Mayo in 1988.
In Rochester.
Through that process, my wife would tell you, so what's my plan been? My wife would say, you know, you took the job that nobody wanted and made it the job that everybody wanted. So when there was a problem, taking that kind of engineering thinking and background and being applied to the problem, so I had a tremendous opportunity to, in the 90s, be on the Minnesota Board of Medical Practice, in the 2000s, be the what they call the chair of the clinical practice committee that ran the practice at Mayo. Mm-hmm. Had an opportunity to become a had an NIH mm-hmm. grant, became a professor in ophthalmology, and then got into my early 50s, and it was like, okay, I've done all this, kind of what's next? Went out to North Carolina, was the CEO of a healthcare system there. It was an interesting process there, because when you're from International Falls and you're used to the winter, and my wife's from southern Minnesota, you think, well, when you've moved to someplace warm, your parents will come and spend some time in the winter. And they did. But what I found from that experience is that if you're going to leave town and go someplace warm, you need to do it in your late 60s or early 70s.
Right.
If you wait till your mid-70s, it's hard to make those connections.
Yeah.
So your parents, my parents, my wife's parents are people that are connected to the community, and they couldn't make those connections.
Right.
And so they said, well, I'd rather be cold and connected,
right,
you know, than warm and doing nothing else.
Right.
So they came back. And then with their health changes, things like that, we found they were going back and forth between North Carolina and Minnesota a lot. We needed to come back here. This was the place
right.
we needed to be. And I got a phone call. I was interviewing for another job in Minnesota. I got a phone call from Essentia, and they said, would you like to interview for the CEO? I said, I would love to do that.
Wow.
So, when you talk about full circle, I went to the Catholic school for the first mm-hmm. for grades 1 through 7. And my fifth grade teacher was Sister Pacelli. She's now Sister Sue Fortier, and she works for me. So one of the sisters that was one of my teachers now works for me or with me at Essentia Health. Every time I see her in the hall, I feel like I owe her homework.
Sister Pacelli. I had her in catechism.
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable. Wonderful person.
Wonderful person. She just had her 60th jubilee.
Wow.
A lot of us got invited. Donnie yeah. Gortz was
really?
There. Yeah, so we saw that. A lot of people from International Falls that are the, you know, what we noticed is somebody mentioned around the table said, I feel like I'm sitting with your parents. Well, yeah, like you look the same. We all look different, right?
And that's incredible. I mean, so through the whole process, you stay tightly connected with iFalls.
Yeah.
You still,
yeah.
You know, God bless your parents, gone, yeah, but you still come home.
Yeah, yeah.
And now you got your summer home here. One of the questions I had for you is, why International Falls, Minnesota, where you could essentially go anywhere you want during off season or long holidays or whatever, and you opt to buy a place here in International Falls and come back here?
Well, it's the community connections.
Yeah.
And I think we have an obligation to give back to the community that supported us. But it doesn't feel like an obligation, it feels like an honor.
I agree.
So you get to come back, you get to meet people, you get to hear things that are going on, you get to contribute in the ways that you can, yeah. You know, make pancakes at the breakfast and all that stuff. Yeah.
And by the way, I was at the breakfast feed, and thank you very much. I guess the best thing about that is you were on your tools in the kitchen.
That's right. Yeah.
Making stuff happen.
Yeah, and my wife was out, you know, making sure that everybody's juice and coffee glasses were filled and orchestrating that out there. But that's something that's really part of our being.
Yeah.
And we give to other communities as well, but that individuals, parents can raise you, but communities support you.
Yeah.
Communities move you forward.
Yeah.
And I think the best investment that we can make in the future of the world is the investment that we make in our children
yep.
and the children in our communities, but our communities overall.
Yeah, I agree 100%. If you had to give advice right now to a high school student, let's say a 12th grader that's graduating, what advice would you give this particular time versus when we were growing up?
I would say be curious. I think curiosity, the people that I like to hire and the people that I'm excited to be around probably have two attributes. They're curious, and yet at the same time, they're disciplined.
Right.
So there's a curiosity that just wonders about stuff, but that curiosity plus discipline then starts peeling back the layers on the onion and says, okay.
Yeah.
And those are the people, I believe, that can make the world better. There are a lot of challenges in the world. I think we forget the challenges that were in the world when we were kids. I mean,
yeah.
Okay, air raid alert, get under your desk because there could be a nuclear bomb. You know, I didn't know a lot about physics there, but from what I saw on TV, that desk wasn't probably going to be a lot of help.
Right.
But I think the threats are more real now than they were. I think you and I had that conversation about social media.
Yeah.
I think there's those distractions out there. And get outside more. Explore the world. Move outside of your comfort zone. When I went to Exeter, I went there and had never been there before.
Right.
I got on my first jet airplane ride and left International Falls and landed in Boston and took a bus to Exeter. And was it stressful? Yeah, it was. But you survive.
You work through
it. You do that. You work your way through it.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, you're better for it. Even if it's a miserable experience, and it wasn't for me, I would say I was incredibly homesick for the first 3 to 4 months.
Yeah.
And challenged in a way I'd never been challenged before.
Right.
But at the same time, still have friends from there, still connected. Right now mentoring some seniors there and some recent graduates.
Wow.
And I would say that for people that are our age and younger, mentor. Jim mentored a lot of people. Wally was a hockey coach and mentored people.
Yeah.
We can sit in our home and be critical of the next generation, but you got to get out there and be part of it. They need that.
And it sticks with them for the rest of their life.
Yes.
Yep. The mentoring.
That's right.
It really does.
That's right. And you may not know what you're teaching at the time. My Grandpa Dave, trained retrievers. And he told me one time, every time you take a dog out, it learns something from you.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be what you're teaching it, but it's going to learn something from you. So be careful. I would say that when you're mentoring, people are going to be learning something from you. So be careful. Pay attention. Because they're watching you all the time. And they watch how you handle the good times. They watch how you handle adversity.
Yep.
And there's a lot of power in giving people advice, but there's a lot more power in being a role model.
Yeah, I agree. Good point. Very good point. I better note that. I'm looking at my children now thinking, wow.
Yeah. Well,
oops.
I had a patient that had 7 kids, so we're talking about that, and I said, what's the thing that you've learned the most, that's the hardest thing about being a parent? And he said, I have some attributes that I'm not proud of, and I see that every now and then in my children, and I know where they got it, and that's the hardest thing.
Yeah, accepting that.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so very good.
Yeah.
If I had to just say a phrase or a person's name, and you respond back 2 or 3 words.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I kind of want to know what your thoughts are. As it relates to, what's your favorite book?
Boy, there are so many good books out there. That's really, really a hard question.
Tell us a lot about a person, what their favorite book is.
I would say one of my favorite series of books was Caro's Master of the Senate of Lyndon Johnson.
Okay.
Because you learn about someone that grows up in very hardscrabble times.
Yep.
He was a teacher, by the way, before he went into the House of Representatives and then went into the Senate.
I did not know that.
And on how he grew and how he worked through influence,
mm-hmm.
and he gained that power, became a very powerful man. But when you think about the Voting Rights Act and civil rights and Social Security and all those things, you have this person that was a man from the South that grew up hardscrabble, that knew what it was like to do that, became very powerful, and then used that power to really shape the world. And we can say that there are things that could have been done better,
mm-hmm.
and things that we're very grateful that were done. But at the same time, he met a lot of failures before he had success, and it never slowed him down.
Right. Determination.
That's exactly right.
Very good. Interesting. Rainy Lake.
One of the most beautiful places in the world. And it is a living landscape, and it changes every day.
Yep.
I like it better when it's low than I do when it's high.
Exactly.
Yeah. Both art can be a problem, but one problem's more challenging than the other.
One's more physically demanding,
yes,
and expensive.
That's exactly right. But it's a place, you asked, what's one of the reasons we come up here? it's a place that my family's connected to.
Yeah.
And it's a place that both my wife and I say, some days, it's, you know, you leave Duluth and it's late and, oh, is it really worth driving up there? But you get up here and it charges your batteries.
And once you wake up in the next morning, that, it's like, I'm here.
Yes,
I'm
yes.
Here.
Yep.
Did you spend much time on the lake when you were a kid?
I did. We had a 14-foot Widowmaker Alumacraft duck boat with a 9.8 Merc on the back. And I can tell you that I've actually been to Kettle Falls in a 9.8 Merc in a 14-foot boat.
That's a 14-hour jaunt.
Yeah, that's a lot of cruise a days.
Oh, and I, another question I had for you, not relating to this, but the hunting shack. Do you spend much time out at the hunting shack?
You know, we got rid of the hunting shack. The hunting shack was a place where you could spend 48 hours and have enough stories for the whole next year.
That's all you needed.
That's all you needed. And it was, you know, here's who the people, you know, Alan Rasmussen and I were the young guys in the shack.
Oh, my gosh.
So you had my dad. You had Wayne Hagland. Yep. You had, you know, Bill Smirka. You had Jorley Johnson. You had all these guys in the shack. So there was a lot of instruction that went on.
Professional storytellers,
exactly right. And I know the truth was somewhere in there someplace, but you didn't work too hard to find it.
Well, then, that's a good segue into my next two comments, questions. Wally Herman.
My dad is one of the best storytellers and one of the most interesting characters. He was very active in the community, you know, ran a business, did a lot of different stuff, was on the library board. I think he's probably the longest tenured member of the library board. Active in the Elks, active in the JCs, a lot of those community things. And because he knew everybody in town, it really helped the Hermans keep on the straight and narrow.
Yep, everybody.
Yeah.
Great storyteller. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yes, yeah.
Last, Kay Herman.
Kay Herman. My mother was a force of nature.
Yeah.
I have to tell, my mother would say anything, okay? And you never had to guess what she was thinking. We were at the airport one time in the Twin Cities, and my mother still believed that even when you got on an airplane, you should be dressed for it. I mean, my mother would say, you're not wearing that, are you, if you're leaving the house? It was something that she thought was inappropriate. And we're standing there, and there's a guy standing like right next to me, closer to her than you are to me right now.
Right.
And she said, why do you think people think it's okay to wear pajamas to the airport? And I said, well, why don't you ask him? He's standing right here and he's turned and walked away. But I think she was the first woman that was on the school board. I think that she might have been the first woman that was on the board of Bremer Bank.
Oh, okay.
You know, very active within the community.
Yeah.
And I would say that she did that because she truly believed, and I think she instilled this in all of us kids, is that you have an obligation that's broader than yourself.
Yeah.
And that obligation requires not just recognition of the obligation, but action towards that obligation.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of the reasons that, you know, I'm active, my brother's active, my sister's active, my brother Tom, who lives out in California, is active in his community.
Sure.
Because I think it was an expectation at the time, but I think it's really was part of our DNA and continues to be part of our DNA.
And that was the expectation.
Right.
Your folks were very active.
Right.
I remember being involved in everything.
Yeah.
And as a result, boom.
Yeah. And I do think that it is part of the DNA. Our youngest son, who lives in Norway now, we had an opportunity last September. He got his PhD in astrophysics. And so we went out with his professors and with all of his friends, and we didn't know what stories to expect. But the stories that we heard that we were very proud to hear is that he's been kind of the glue that's kept the community together through the pandemic, did a lot of collaboration with a lot of other research groups and pulled people together to do that. It's a lot of work, but it's something. And of course, when things are a lot of work, you complain about it. Yep. But and also, then he started an ultimate frisbee team in Norway. And they go all over Europe and play ultimate frisbee. So he has that community connection gene as well.
He's involved.
He is.
By default, he's involved.
That's right.
I think
he wants to be in the middle of it.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Those are great stories.
Yeah.
Well, I don't. I mean, I We could go on for a long time. Because I got stories, a lot of them we can't say on air.
I know, and then Nikki's going to have to cut this down to just a few minutes. So, you know, best wishes to her on that.
I just want to say thanks, Dave, and congratulations on all your success. Truly unbelievable. From Eye Falls to running an extremely large corporation. That's unbelievable.
Well, thanks, Lim. But what I've said before and I will say again is that nobody gets here alone. There's a Southern saying that says, when you see a turtle on the top of a fence post, you can be pretty sure it didn't get up there by itself. I would say... I think that's the same thing here. Anybody that says I did it on my own, I really feel sorry for.
But you had the drive, Dave.
I do have some drive. I will admit to that. I'm very fortunate to not need a lot of sleep at night and very curious about stuff. But I've always done things because I found them exciting and I found them fun.
Well, congratulations. And thanks for all your support for Falls Education Foundation. It's just great, everything you do. Again, what you did at the Pancake Feed was unbelievable. Hundreds of people.
Well, that was so much fun. And what I will say is, you know, I thanks to the community for allowing us to come back.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Right. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Lim. Take care.
You too. Bye.